Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Above the Fold, and you can stream the show live at realtalk93.com. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home, but it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way. And I recommend you start with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior or exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you and answer all your questions. Stop by today and get a free paint sample. Give them a call at 385-6649. That's 385-6649. We appreciate their sponsorship of Above the Fold here on our Tuesday edition, where we're going to dig into some local issues via some state stories. How does that sound? I hope you had a great weekend. We'll have in our studio, we have her in now, but we'll be talking to her in the next couple of days, next couple of segments on issues in the Florida legislature. And that is Allison Tant, who represents District 9, which covers a large portion of the north side of Leon County. So we're going to get her view of where the session is, good things, bad things. And then in the second segment, we're going to get some details on specific hot button items, which would include the anti-riot bill and the elections bill, which are, you know, really dominating a lot of the media around the state now. And obviously on the elections bill, it's the national media, because there are a number of states that are making some changes to elections laws. And I'm very interested in, you know, instead of this emotional debate over voter integrity and voter suppression, let's get right in the middle of this and talk about the nuts and bolts of some of these specific issues. There's three or four items in the election bill that we'll get Ms. Tant to comment on. And some of these, I think you'll be surprised when you actually sit down, like we try to do here on Above the Fold, and talk about policies and issues instead of trying to get someone to click on a story by driving them emotionally crazy. You know, and we've seen this around the country on both sides. We've seen it over the last 4 years. You know, anything you try to do is either racist or voter suppression, or you're keeping voters from making their choices known. And I think, you know, what we have to do is just look at the specifics and try to come to some compromise. So it'll be interesting to hear her position on some of those issues and get an overview of the legislative session. So we'll spend two segments on that. I wanted to talk a little bit about two major issues that are occurring right now in the Florida legislature. We're in about the middle of the session. I believe it is over April 30th, or supposed to be, the 60-day session. But we had the governor today come out and talk about this vaccine passport, which is being floated around the country. The parameters of it, again, are not really known, but it is, you know, again, this buzzword on a vaccine passport has got people up in arms about, you know, being able to travel. Is it going to be required to do simple things? And so the governor came out and, you know, made his position pretty strongly known, that, listen, we're not going to cooperate with this. We don't think this is needed. And so, once again, Governor DeSantis is trying to set up this, it's not a fight, but he's letting people know where he stands on these specific issues. And now if you start reading some of the state media, and I'm not talking about the legacy media, there's, when you talk about legacy media, you know, you talk about the papers, the Orlando Sentinel, the Miami Herald, Tampa Bay Times, there are other blogs and reporting digital outlets that also cover state news. There's Politico. And, you know, there's starting to be this consensus that, you know, despite the way DeSantis communicates, and maybe is not as humble as he should be, but he's gotten a couple of things right. And that would be opening the schools. It would be focusing on the over 65 crowd in terms of vaccinations. And also now there's a latest report from Politico about how these FEMA super sites that President Biden was supporting look to be very ineffective in getting the vaccine out. And then again, this is a report by Politico, and the actual effective way of doing it is through these drugstores, through grocery stores, because that's where people go all the time. And so this is a developing story, and it'll be interesting to see how it falls out with the legacy media. But again, DeSantis, you know, not the fan of the legacy media and some of the ways he communicates on some of these issues. One of the other things I wanted to talk about was here locally is the crime stats. We update crime incidents and arrest on a daily basis, and we just published a newspaper last week. And if you want to subscribe, you can go to TylerSports.com and subscribe. But these crime stats are exclusive to our newspaper, and you get them first there, and then we usually talk about them after the newspaper goes out. But one of the things we are concerned about here locally is the decline in arrest. We reported at the end of last year that looking at the booking reports, that if you looked at a comparison between a pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, arrests were down 40%. Now, we can understand the initial reasons why that was happening, but it continued through the beginning of the year, and now we've got some latest numbers from January to March 21st. Total arrests are down 30% compared to the same period last year. And this is even though that we have violent crime increasing, violent crime incidents. But the arrests are actually increased a little bit. If you look at in January when it was down 40%, and now it's only down 30%. So maybe we are making this move of getting back to sort of the place we were before the pandemic. But now if you look at TPD incidents, as they're reported on a daily basis, property incidents are down, but violent crime, which includes assault and battery, sexual battery, and robbery, are up about 40% when compared to previous year's numbers. And so, anyway, these are numbers we should keep an eye on, especially with the drop or the background of the negotiations going on between the PBA. And yes, that billboard is still up. The PBA billboard that is really taking a shot at the city and the level of crime and trying to improve their negotiating stance. Not sure how that's going to work. But again, these crime statistics are something that coming out of the pandemic, one of the concerns that a lot of businesses have is that we don't want to let this get ingrained into our community because it's going to be tougher to root out. And the problem with the pandemic is that it really put a roadblock between what law enforcement officials and city policies were, which is community policing. Given the COVID pandemic, you know, police officers and law enforcement officers pulled back for valid reasons. And now the question is now is when are we going to start engaging again and following up with this community policing and getting maybe some of these violent crime incidents under control? So those are all big questions. Now, as I said, we'll have Representative Tant in studio for the next two segments. In our last segment, we'll give you a weekly COVID update. And we'll also talk a little bit about the Agriculture Commissioner, Nikki Fried. We've got another story out about this cannabis company that has some connections to her family. So we'll talk about that in the last segment. But coming up, Representative Allison Tant will discuss at the midpoint what's going on with the Florida legislative session. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. We'll be right back after this brief break. You never take advice. All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3 as we pivot to state issues that are impacting Leon County. And I'm happy to welcome Representative Allison Tant to the studio. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be with you. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, you are my representative from where I live. I live in Clark Estates in District 9, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And just give a brief geographic, what do you cover?
Okay, so District 9 is essentially the heart of Tallahassee. It runs all the way from downtown, midtown, up to the Georgia line, and it hooks back around into Southwood. So so I've got a really beautiful part of town. I love my district. It's great.
Okay, and then just to understand the perspective that Representative Tant's coming from, she is a Democrat, so she's operating in a, you know, during a legislative session in the minority. Mm-hmm. So it's good to have that perspective on here. And so far, what's your impressions? I guess this is your first legislative session as a elected official.
Yes.
So give us some your first impressions.
It's interesting. So first of all, I am been working hard on my relationships with my fellow members, including my Republican colleagues. And I have hosted a couple of mixers where we've gotten together, and I've been really like connecting with them as human beings. Whenever I have a bill up, which I've had three of my bills moving so far, I go and sit down and ask for their support, explain the bills to them, do my work. Everybody matters to me in the process. And so consequently, when they have bills up, they talk to me. And for the vast majority of those bills, I've been able to vote with them on it, or I have asked questions that have led to changes, and we're working together very well for the most part.
So what you just described to me is a little different than what you read in the media in terms of people, you know, Republicans versus Democrats yelling about different, the extremes of different bills. So what you explained, I'm sure that's not unique just to you. Are there other people, Democrats and Republicans, talking about bills, trying to get things done?
Yes, in many ways, yes. But there are obviously bills that people are just on very, very diametrically opposed sides of. And that's just some of those things you can't bridge.
Right.
But we respect one another in terms of, like, I understand that that's an ideological issue that you have, that's where you are, and they're not going to change. But where I can find a way to work with you, I'm going to.
Right. So. And we'll talk a little bit about some of those specifics mm-hmm. in the next segment. But talk about a little bit. So you're allowed to, as a representative, you're allowed to sponsor how many bills?
Yes, all of us. All of us in the House.
Oh, even in the yes. House and Senate?
Well, the Senate can sponsor more.
Okay.
But all of us in the House, whether you're R or D, we all get to sponsor 7 bills apiece.
Okay. So talk a little bit about maybe some of the bills that you've sponsored that are still alive and have a chance to becoming law.
So thank you. Yes, I have sponsored... I did sponsor all 7 bills, and three of them have been moving. One of them I actually pulled back on myself because it wasn't ready to go. It just needs a little more work by the interested parties. But the three that are moving, two of them are about people with disabilities. One requires the Agency for Persons with Disabilities to provide a roadmap to families like mine, and families all over the state of Florida of the existing resources that families need to explore to ensure the maximum outcome for their loved one. So right now, my son Jeremy has been on the APD wait list for 5 years. We've had 2 letters from APD. The 2 have been, you're on the wait list for services, you're at category 7 of 7. When he turned 22, you're on the wait list for services, you're at category 6 out of 7. That's great. I'm not disputing that. But I need to know, for other families need to know, are things like, should I be looking at applying for vocational rehabilitation job training services? Should I be looking at Students for Centers for Unique Abilities? If my child's in school, I need to look at the transition program and the ESE program. Should I be looking at the ABLE United program, which is a program that helps you plan financially for your loved one with disabilities so that when grandma leaves Johnny $10,000, it doesn't knock him off of his benefits and stuff like that. So that's one bill. The other bill related to people with disabilities is a bill that requires planning for job force training for people with disabilities starting in middle school, requiring and by the time they reach high school that parents be informed of everything that they need to be doing, because that's not happening now, and that current ESE programs in schools, transition programs in schools, and post-collegiate or post-secondary programs that exist for students with disabilities are gone over with students, and then finally that the parent understands they need to defer a diploma.
So on those bills, do they have companions in the Senate?
Yes, the Senate bills are also, both of those bills, by the way, are ready for floor action, and the same on the Senate side. So my Senate sponsor is Senator Annette Tadeo. She's a friend of mine from Miami, and her bills have moved through their committee stops in the Senate, just as mine have moved here, and they're both ready for action on the Florida Senate and House floors.
So now, obviously, one of the big things that they do in this session is a budget, and obviously
sure.
with the COVID pandemic, what are we going to see here in Leon County? I know there's a lot of federal money, but are there going to be some obvious deficiencies in the budget process that is going to affect Leon County that you've been able to see, or are there going to be enough of these federal dollars to, you know, button up things?
You're asking a really good question, and so right now, we are dealing with the budget as it currently stands. These federal dollars that are coming aren't here yet. And so...
They're promised.
They're promised, right. And so you've seen our budget talk about very draconian cuts to hospitals, which breaks my heart because our hospitals just carried us through
right.
the worst of the worst. And so we've got some cuts that we're talking about there. We've got cuts in education. We've got cuts in health and human services across the board, and in affordable housing. But I do think that what we're talking about right now might be a little premature to what we're going to see when we know a little bit more about what the actual federal dollars are going to be. And of course, with federal dollars, there are restrictions on what they can be used
right.
for. So for example, with affordable housing, you and I were talking about this ahead of time. You cannot use these dollars that are coming from the feds on bricks and sticks to build new housing that's in for affordable housing for
right.
first-time home buyers, first responders, teachers, and then really low-income individuals. What you can use those federal dollars for are things that like utility assistance, rental assistance, but you can't use it for bricks and sticks.
So it's more for emergency purposes or
correct.
Just stopgap measures.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now the other thing, you get updates on the state economy. Obviously, it's been a big issue in terms of the pandemic. What are your latest reports? Are we seeing some improvement?
Yes, you heard me take a sigh of relief there. Yes, actually, I've been very concerned about that because when I was running, I was struck by the fact that the Revenue Estimating Conference had said that for Tallahassee and related to the pandemic, that we were looking at a revenue shortfall that wasn't going to bring us back to pre-COVID conditions for 10 years. And that was like really... Yes. jaw-dropping to me when I read that. It's better. It's definitely better there. Now, they're still projecting a hole in the state budget, but like you and I just were talking about with the federal dollars coming in, I think it's not going to be nearly as bad as we thought. Definitely revenue estimates are up over that, and particularly with COVID vaccinations, with the coming through online and people being able to get back to work far sooner. You know, if you think about it, back in maybe July when that estimate came out, we didn't know what we didn't know in July, for heaven's sakes. We didn't know there was a vaccine that was going to be so available so quickly, right? We thought it was going to maybe take a year or more or two to get in everybody's arms. I mean, things are really, we've really exceeded our expectations.
So you can sense here in Tallahassee, do you sense a change in the economy when things picking up when you're out and traveling and you're in session? So you see, you're down at the Capitol. Are people starting to move around a little bit more?
Well, I'd like to think so. We're not allowed to have people in the Capitol. So people are not allowed. That's a particular grudge of mine because I feel like I'm not getting enough information about bills. And so constituent emails mean the world to me. That really is a huge driver to me when I get emails about things, as well as phone calls to the district and then texts from my friends. But people being in and out of the Capitol, it's just not happening. And then so when I'm downtown and I go outside, I feel like a mole coming out from under the ground sometimes. I will see some people downtown, but I just feel a sigh of relief that's coming kind of across the board that we might be able to be back to like real life and real normalcy, summer, fall, that kind of thing.
Right. And then again, it's session, we're midway through this session, so there'll be nobody in the Capitol giving testimony. They actually have to go to the Civic Center, right, and do it.
For the Senate side, yes. For the House, they can let you in, but you have to have filled out a committee appearance card 24 hours in advance, and then you have to have, you have to be in, go through the whole thing you have to be there with a member that lets you in.
So it's not a real friendly process.
No.
That won't get changed until next year.
Correct.
I assume. And then now on the, in terms of the, real quick, just 30 seconds, on the COVID liability bill, are you...
That's already passed. It's on the way to the governor.
So, it passed. So what were your position on that? I mean, were you supportive of that?
Well, I definitely want to support our healthcare folks and our businesses, but I definitely had some reservations as well, and I can get into that after the break.
All right, that sounds great. All right, when we get back, we'll finish up on the COVID bill, the COVID liability bill, and then we're going to talk about the elections bill and the anti-riot bill. So we'll get a little bit more controversial topics here with Representative Allison Tan, and we appreciate her joining us. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break.
Ah, my ear.
Back there's no tomorrow, and all I've got
Hi, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Want to get right back to our guest here, Representative Allison Tant. Want to finish up some thoughts. We talked about this COVID liability bill during the break, and I think this sort of summarizes sort of what the legislative process is about. This is a bill that you probably think was needed, but tell everybody what you had sort of told me during the break.
Well, first of all, there's not been a ton of lawsuits filed, so I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of lawsuits. But also, I think that, like, I actually talked to a lot of people here locally before I voted on it. And so it was like, yeah, it'll stop a couple of nuisance lawsuits. But, you know, there are some folks who got it right and some who got it wrong. And, you know, so some people should be held liable and then others, you know, did their very best. And so, you know, it's going to be one of those things where it's all going to come out in the wash in the way that it rolls out and impacts people.
Yeah, and so the point being that it's gonna protect people who did their best from nuisance mm-hmm. lawsuits, but at the same time, some people that maybe didn't do the right thing are gonna get covered in this, mm-hmm. and sometimes that's the way legislation works.
That's true, whether we like it or not, but that's true, yes, for sure. And for the vast majority of people in my community, in our community, I saw business owners do their level best every day of the week, try to get it right. There is one outlier that you and I talked about that I will not name here. That was an issue for me, but I raised that issue in committee on the healthcare side. And but the good news is that the employers in Tallahassee really tried to do their level best for folks.
Okay, let's controversial issues now.
Okay.
Election bill, want to run through some parameters or some sections of this bill and get your position on this.
Before you do that, let me just start by saying we had a great outcome this last election. I didn't necessarily agree with every result. You know that.
You mean
know?
A great process.
The process was fair and legal and transparent. But I understand that my colleagues do want to make some more changes.
Well, you say it was a great election, and didn't you win during the last election?
I won. Yes, I did.
It's a really good election.
That part was really good. Now, that part I'm real happy with. But
all right, so some of the parameters here, and it gets into the weeds, but I think people have been following this. Let's talk about drop boxes. Drop boxes are new because of the pandemic.
Right.
And so now a lot of states are going to keep them in place, but they're making some changes. Your position on drop boxes?
Well, my position on drop boxes is really reflective of how well Tallahassee did it. Leon County's drop boxes were manned. They were not out 24 hours, 7 days a week. They were only there during voting hours. When it was not voting hours, they were actually removed from wherever they were, brought inside a locked chamber or put on the van of the SOEs, and then brought back out the next morning. That's what I advocated for when the issues were first talked about in committee. Is I actually said I really want to see manned lockboxes, and that was like a happy surprise to some people. I never knew there were unmanned drop boxes.
Right.
And
so you support that.
I absolutely support that.
So, and the other thing that's sort of associated with this, and we talked about a little bit in terms of collecting absentee ballots mm-hmm. from voters. So the first of all, the quote ballot harvesting. Do you think that campaign people should be able to go around and collect absentee ballots?
I don't think that happened in the vast majority of things. Like, I got to tell you, I was at the library outside, the Northeast Library. I never saw people coming in with, like, shoeboxes full of ballots.
No, but you think that should, and again, Leon County is a little bit different. We're not mm-hmm. talking about bigger cities, but in the state of Florida, so the law is that you have to be, I think you have to have a family member or you have to have an affidavit for someone
Correct.
To pick up your absentee ballot. So you agree with that?
Well, that's what I saw happen in Leon County.
Okay.
Now, I will also say that, like, the bill as it's currently written and that's going through the legislative process is going to require someone to bring their ID when they drop it off. So the ballot drop boxes that were the drive-through where you could just hand it to the
right.
young person standing by the thing, they're now going to have to check the ID. And the other thing is if the addresses don't match, then they cannot accept the ID, the ballot. So they're also going to go back to now on those ballots printing on the address, the return address.
Right.
So that is going to be a privacy issue there that comes up. On addition to that, on the back, you have to have your signature fully visible on the back of that envelope. So that's another thing.
And it appears there are some privacy issue concerns here. Now, do you think they're going to be addressed?
Here's the thing. There's a couple different bills going through. This bill that we're talking about,
the House bill,
the main elections bill, is going to, right now under current law, your name, address, date of birth, the last four of your Social Security number, and is all public record. So then under this bill now, your signature will be public record, all of those data fields. So that means, like, what do you need for identity theft? Signature, date of birth, address. You know, like, that's not much more that you need. So that's a concern. And so that I've raised in committee. And I don't know what they're going to do about that. And if, particularly if you have the printed address on the envelope, it's going to be even that much worse, because then you don't have to worry about, does somebody scribble their address on or what? So that's a concern. There is a bill that's going through that actually was in my committee yesterday, which I had raised concerns about because it didn't shield enough, but it would basically shield year of birth, month and year of birth, and then it would shield your email address,
right,
and cell number. So, like, that's not going to get to the data points, which is the signature and SSI, Social Security number, that I think is going to be easily able to be. And that bill is not, I don't know that the Senate companion's moving. I'm hearing that bill may not pass.
So you got the privacy issues. Now, the other thing is the absentee ballot request.
Yes.
It is, I think they're trying to, the bill that you have to do it every 2 years. Currently, it's every 4 years.
Correct.
You don't have to renew it. Your position on that?
Well, so this is going to make supervisors of elections have to communicate with voters that they have to renew their ballot request annually. So this does not apply. When the bill was just taken up in my committee, they grandfathered in,
right,
the next election cycle, which, that's good, because that's going to give our SOEs time to figure out how to do this and then figure out how to pay for it. So they're going to now have to communicate with you that you are not going to be able to vote in the next four elections. You're going to have to do this every 2 years. You're going to have to up.
So you'd rather it see every four. You'd rather see it stay every four.
I would,
four
and
years.
I'll tell you why. And that the reason is because they tried this once before and went back to the four-year cycle just because things didn't change and it costs a lot of money. And SOEs are saying it's going to cost $14 million statewide to communicate with voters about this. And I just didn't see where there was a problem. I asked questions. Where did you see a problem? Where did you see fraud? Where did you see,
right,
ballots being processed illegally? And there wasn't. So,
all right. So the way I would summarize the position of Representative Allison Tan on this election bill is that first, you support integrity within the drop boxes,
correct,
security. You'd rather keep it at 4 years, mm-hmm, for absentee ballot requests. And number three is the issue on privacy, mm-hmm, concerns.
Yes.
Was that fair?
Yes. And the other thing is the most recent signature, like in this current bill, it was requiring that you only use the most recent signature. Currently, our SOEs use a database of a lot of training on being able to look at signatures across several signatures. So my biggest thing is, like, when I go to vote in person early and I sign for my ballot, I might scribble my name. Is that the most recent signature?
Right.
That will not match what's either on my driver's license or other documents.
And that obviously is signature matching is an issue all over the country. All right. So in our remaining 2 or 3 minutes, I want to get to the anti-riot bill.
Okay.
What are your general thoughts on that?
Well, that bill, actually, I was not on the committees that saw that bill. I was when it came to the,
right,
floor. But what was interesting is that my colleagues reported, and I, by the way, got hundreds upon hundreds, probably well over 1,000 emails about that bill, and not one of them asked me to vote for it.
Right.
I do have a colleague who's my suite mate who was on all of the committees. He said he got 14,000 plus emails on the bill, and only six asked for a yes vote, and the rest were no. And he said it's the only bill I've ever seen to unite the anti-abortion and the pro-choice people on the same issue, because they were concerned about, you know, about getting caught up in a confrontation gone awry, or a meeting gone awry. And that's one of the things that this bill actually makes it so that if three people get together and something goes south, then that constitutes a riot under this bill.
So what I'm hearing you say is there's not really a groundswell of support for this. However,
did pass the House. It did pass the House. It does not have a Senate companion at this point. I don't know if it becomes a bargaining chit later on in the session. It may. I don't know. I don't know how that would work out anyway, since there isn't a Senate companion at this time. I do think that, obviously rioting is illegal. Looting is illegal. Causing property damage is illegal. Causing bodily harm to somebody is illegal. All those things are already illegal and should be.
Now, I would say that people that are arguing is that the laws on the board, actually, if you look at what happened in Leon County, they actually didn't work because we had police officers that were struck. Okay, we had
Why didn't we persecute?
Yeah,
prosecute.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I don't know.
I can't answer that.
Yeah, so, and that's a good point.
And upping the penalties isn't going to necessarily change that. No. If they don't prosecute, if they don't arrest, what do you do?
You raise good questions, and I think from what you're saying is there's not a groundswell support for this. It seems to be more of a political bill that is being driven because of, again, and this is what happens on a lot of things that get the emotional side going and they drive these bills. You said it doesn't have a Senate companion. I wasn't aware of that. Something I learned today. So we'll have to see where that goes.
Right. And you know what? I will say this much, that regardless of where I stand on an issue or what my thinking is on an issue, I respect the views of other people, and it matters that they could take the time to communicate with me because it really does make a difference in the way I view something.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate you joining us. We're going to have you back at the end of session.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll do another review of what happened here because it sounds like there's still a lot in balance.
We're only halfway. Tomorrow is the halfway mark. So we're only halfway there. So we got a long way to go.
All right. Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
And have a good rest of the session. All right. When we get back, we will focus on a couple local things. We'll talk about the weekly COVID update. And then, we'll get a Nikki Fried update on with the cannabis company that we've been writing about, another development with that over the weekend. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. All right, welcome back to our last segment here on Above the Fold on Real Talk 93.3. We'll be back again on Thursday to give you a rundown of what's going on in not only the legislative session, locally, no meetings, no major meetings this week. There are a couple of citizen committees for different things meetings, so we'll try to glean some information from that, bring it to you on Thursday as we try to just dig into the local stuff here. But obviously with session in town, that also warrants our attention. I'm so glad that Representative Allison Tant could show up in person and talk for two segments. Very direct answers. She doesn't sound like, and this is her first term, doesn't sound like the standard politician. I was surprised by some of her answers on the elections bill. She agrees with, I think, some of the parameters that are in there. When you start, one of the things that really irritates me looking at this debate is we had a COVID pandemic. And we changed some election rules to facilitate voters who didn't want to touch people, didn't want to be around people because of the COVID pandemic. And that's understandable. So they made some changes to these rules. And now what's happening is with the pandemic, obviously, hopefully going to go away in the next election, do we keep those rules in place? Well, I think these election laws, if you look at, for example, in Georgia, where they've pushed through changes to the election laws, they are actually keeping drop boxes, which is something they didn't have before the pandemic. Now, what they're doing is what
Representative Allison Tant agrees with. They are putting some integrity measures around these drop boxes that they didn't have during the last election. I mean, they were unmanned in Atlanta. They were open 24 hours, only video surveilled. I don't know who reviewed the videos. And so she agrees with some of those things. And I think that's, you know, you won't get that in these media headlines where they're trying to talk about racism and voter suppression. There are some very common sense measures that can be taken that will continue to allow people to vote in big numbers. And I just, you know, again, it's good to hear someone talk rationally about that. Now, listen, we disagree on some of the issues, I think, with that voter bill. Although, you know, the drop to 2 years requesting absentee ballots, where it was four, I bet that gets changed. And again, being halfway through session, you get a lot of these headlines, and then some of these things are going to change. So it'll be interesting to see what happens at the end. And I'll be watching Representative Tant's vote on this, because I think that you know, you might get some Democrat support for these things, because again, and I'm going to say this once again, they are actually expanding the way people can vote by adopting drop boxes as a part of the standard voting procedures when they weren't in place before the pandemic. So that is something to note. And all right, enough on that. Let's pivot real quickly to a couple other topics. The weekly COVID numbers, if you go to our report that we do on a weekly basis and look at the charts, you know, the decreases have ceased. They've reached very low numbers, and now it's sort of flattened out. The seven-day average of the number of cases is just over 20, I believe. Let's see. No, it's just under 50. That's where it's been for the last couple of weeks after really falling from 200, and actually it reached 300 in the middle of January. Hospitalizations are flat at about 20. Again, a seven-day average. That was at a 134 back in February. So that is falling, you know, really dramatically, and now has leveled out at those numbers. The positivity rates, which, remember, the big number was getting below 5%. We've been below 5%, the seven-day average, since February 21st. It fell below 3%. It is still below 3%, although it did inch up, I believe, from 2.4 to 2.7% over the last week. So now that you've had these major declines, we'll see, you know, we're going to basically track it in terms of how much it fluctuates. Now, we've seen some national reporting that, you know, case numbers are up, 10% or so. We've seen things flattened out in the statewide numbers, in the Florida numbers. The key thing here now is going to be looking at hospitalizations and deaths, because the vaccine, which Governor DeSantis is focused on getting the most vulnerable vaccinated, people may put down their guard, the ones that don't feel vulnerable and don't have high risk of a bad outcome. And so then you could see an increase in cases. What you shouldn't see an increase in is hospitalizations and deaths. If we start to see that, then we're going to have other issues. So we'll keep an eye on that, not only here locally, but also at a statewide perspective, and move from there. I know that I think Governor DeSantis said we're close to having 75% of all seniors over 65 vaccinated. And so those are hopefully keep seeing those numbers increase. Now, the last thing I want to talk about is our agricultural commissioner Nikki Fried. We have published three stories on this cannabis company that her fiance, Mr. Bergman, has started. And we started, we got some tips a while back. And you can go to Talis Reports and read about the cannabis company that was started by Mr. Bergman, Nikki Fried's father, Ronald Bergman, and the wife of a legislator, Hallie Ustein, I believe that's how you say that. What we found out over the weekend is that this is an ongoing concern. They have been conducting business. There is a public relations firm here in town who was contracted to provide some, I would say, pretty high level of PR services, about $12,500 worth a month. They engaged them and paid them for about 3 or 4 months and then stopped paying, but with the promise to pay. So the services were delivered. Well, they served a lawsuit on the founders of Iconoclast Ventures, which is the name of the cannabis company. And actually, the person that got served, one of the people that got served here in Tallahassee was Commissioner Nikki Freed on behalf of her fiance, Jake Bergman. They share a house in Northeast Tallahassee. And basically, the lawsuit details how they breach of contract, how they misled this public relations committee or public relations company into thinking they were going to pay for services, and they have not. And so, again, I think what this reveals is that this cannabis company that involves some connections to our agricultural commissioner, Nikki Freed, who has been promoting the legalization of marijuana and involved with trying to impact policy with regards to medical marijuana, is involved, has a lot of connections to a company that is trying to capitalize on cannabis markets. And now, here's for the, you know, this is the major issue, is that the legacy media, the mainstream media in Florida, is not covering this. This is our third story about this, and we'll continue to follow it. But it's amazing that this has not reached the level of interest for the mainstream media here in Florida. And you can get caught up with all those reports at TallahasseeReports.com. And then we'll have an update on this hopefully on Thursday. Maybe there'll be some new developments. So anyway, well, that's our show today. I hope you enjoyed our moving into the realm of the legislative session with Representative Allison Tant. We'll try to do a little bit more of that on a select basis. So again, have a great afternoon, and we'll be back here on Thursday. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold. Waiting for the